Welcome to Studio 86, in-depth discussions with RIT newsmakers. Come on inside.
Welcome inside Studio 86. I'm Mike Saffron of RIT University News. And in Studio 86 today, making her record-setting 35th appearance on Studio 86. No, I'm just kidding. Mary Lynn Breaux is here for her record-setting. I wasn't kidding about that part. Fourth appearance on Studio 86.
Mike, I'm honored.
And Mary Lynn, of course, is the Caroline Werner Gannett Professor in the Humanities here at RIT in the College of Liberal Arts, and also founder and director of the Gannett Project, which is now in what year, Mary Lynn?
We are in our sixth year. Our first year, Mike, was the Cognitive Revolution, a year dedicated to Darwin in our everyday lives. And then we found our groove in 2007-08 with Visionaries in Motion. So it's the fifth year of Visionaries in Motion.
Tell us a little bit about, we'll certainly talk about the, once again, the spectacular lineup that you have, the lineup of speakers for the year ahead. But let's talk a little bit about the series itself. And in the recent issue of Athenaeum, which is now on newsstands, we talked about the upcoming year. And I happened to write this piece, and I referred to it as the premier lecture series here at RIT. It certainly is the premier lecture series at RIT. And I know that you like to kind of refer to the speakers as cultural ambassadors for RIT.
That's right, Mike. We think they are, and we work a half year to a year in advance to choose precisely the people who will be the best cultural ambassadors for RIT. That is to say, graphic novelists, for example, biomedical people, engineers and architects, people in the graphic arts in other ways, social innovators, for example. We have the whole range of them coming up this year. People in our series, we like to think, are also a little bit contrarian. They don't come out of a single silo discipline. They are people who, like, and if I can just use an example, one of our lead speakers this year is Sebastian Sung, who is, he has a lot of titles. He's professor of computational neuroscience at MIT, but he also has affiliations with the Howard Hughes Institute and other liaisons as well. But we like to think of people like Sebastian Sung as representing the crossing over borders in discipline. He has certainly done that. He works in computational neuroscience with, he's going to be delivering a talk called Searching for the Self and the Brain's Connections. But his research is in physics, computer science, neuroscience. Our look at our first speaker, National Science Award winner, National Medal of Science Award winner, Esther Conwell. Dr. Conwell works at the juncture of biology, certainly, physics and chemistry. So we like to think of our people as in front of the pack in terms of their work that crosses disciplinary borders. They hold multiple affiliations, and if I'm not jumping ahead, I'd like to brag a little bit. They many times, at least two or three times a year in our eight speakers, we have people who are MacArthur or Genius Award winners. They are not only single TEDsters, technology, entertainment, design, but they are multiple TEDsters. So they are in front of the pack, mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. And that's precisely the charge, Mike, that I was given in 2006, which was to bring together and explore new intersections of disciplines, humanities, social science, and technologies.
And you really do attract not only a wide audience from across campus. It's not a single discipline. It certainly isn't just students from liberal arts programs, for instance, coming to these, but across the campus and the Rochester community in general.
We were nominated this year for Best Organization with Metropolitan Arts and Cultural Council in town. Our attendance, we figured out, averages about 300 people per talk. Now, sometimes that's fewer people if we're in a smaller auditorium. oftentimes it's many more people. For example, Stefan Sagmeister, the bad boy of graphic design, drew easily 750 people. Ray Kurzweil, futurist, we all know who Ray Kurzweil is, drew probably 1,500 people in half of Gordon Fieldhouse. So we frequently, we not only fill the auditoriums that we choose, but we exceed them. So 300 would be a good average per talk. Interesting crowds too, Mike. They are drawn from the eight institutions around the Rochester area, sometimes even further away, Buffalo, Syracuse, Ithaca. But they also, we have a vibrant following from the Rochester professional community. We have people who come in packs and in groups to support our series each year. Talk after talk, they are there. And we are, as you know, open and free to the public. So we're happy about that. We continue that.
You were also, the series was also recognized by City Newspaper about a few months ago last year.
Actually, December 2009, we won Best Lecture Series in Rochester. That's really a wonderful award. We are very grateful for that.
And most of this year's talks will be in Webb Auditorium, I see. A couple of exceptions, but looking at the schedule, most in Webb, and certainly accommodates the large crowds that you do tend to draw.
Precisely. Our first talk with Dr. Conwell will be in the smaller venue of Carlson, and we have a social innovator, David Bornstein. Interesting man, because he's talking about, are we on the verge of a new enlightenment? And he'll be in Carlson on April 2nd. He does the Fixes column, as you probably know, in New York Times, and has founded Dowser.org. He should be exciting. Yeah, the norm is Webb Auditorium, which holds slightly more than 300 people.
I know you've got a speaker on the schedule for this coming year who you describe as someone who crosses borders. Could you tell us about that speaker?
Oh, they all cross borders, Mike, but this one in particular does so with a kind of panache and flair. He's Dr. Drew Barry from Australia. He's at the Walter and Eliza Hall Institute of Medical Research in Melbourne. He's a MacArthur Award-winning biomedical animator. What does that mean? Many people have seen his work at the Guggenheim, MoMA, at the Royal Institute in Great Britain, or at University of Geneva. This man has been trained as a cell biologist in light and in electron microscopy. But he brings this rigorous scientific approach to every project and immerses himself in structural biology, in chemistry, in genetics. Why? To create three- and four-dimensional renderings of concepts like cell death, tumor growth, the packaging of DNA. He captures details of molecular shape, scale, behavior, and dynamics in his animations. So he's a real synthesizer across a number of fields. And what does that mean for us, for the viewer, for the audience? He just inspires a sense of wonder and a more brilliant grasp we all leave with of biological systems.
A true polymath, perhaps.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How about, again, another one, probably as you mentioned, probably this covers more than one speaker, but makers and workers.
For that, I would probably say we could cite many different people in that, but our last speaker on May 2nd is going to be MacArthur Award-winning sculptor Elizabeth Turk. She hangs out in marble yards. She's talking about the emptiness of matter. Now, she expands the whole notion of stone, primarily marble, reminding us that you can set up a kind of dialogue with what looks like an intractable material without eradicating it. Now, she's very inspired by science, and she's fueled by notions of will, intention, mass, and void. She takes and transforms that signature medium of marble so that into what look like lace creations, creations that are intricate and seemingly weightless. They defy expectations. Let me give you an example from her displays. By the way, she employs a distinguished variety of tools, like electric grinders and files and small dental tools. And she does this with a kind of dexterity of touch. But she had a display that traveled, an exhibit that traveled a number of different big galleries called The Collars. And it was a series of 16 carved sculptures, carved in marble, made to look like Elizabethan fabric. she explores this rich variety of organic and geometric patterning. So she takes marble, a seemingly untractable material, and makes it seem fragile and textile-like in her compositions, yet it has the strength and the heft of stone. So she creates this surprising sense of buoyancy with these marble ribbons that are suspended in air. Her work is visually arresting. Her work is a feat of precision. She pushes the physical limits of her material, and she appeals so much to everything we stand for as a campus devoted to makers, to workers, to people who use tools in a deft and precise way.
Mary Lynn, how about if we talk just a little bit about some of those behind the scenes, I guess we could say, people who have also contributed to making this lecture series such a success through the years?
Sure, Mike. First and foremost, of course, would be my working group. We're very important as a team. We together are drawn from a whole range of disciplines and schools at RIT and the community. We bring our individual disciplinary expertise, but we are also very broad and wide readers and thinkers, I think, mm-hmm. I believe. We also employ and try to bring to the fore current RIT faculty and recent faculty in our design work. From the very first year, 2006, Stephanie Kirshen Cole, a collage artist with an international reputation, worked for us, joined us as a designer, both our web designs and our famous iconic swirling dancer, which has become part of our logo as a Visionaries in Motion series. Stephanie died this May, and we have dedicated the series to her this year and to her memory. By the way, there's a terrific exhibit of her work, internationally prominent work, in NTID's Dyer Gallery. We've seen that, many of us, throughout the last days of the summer. I'd advise anyone to go take a look at that. We also have behind the scene people like our webmaster, Chris Tompkins Tinch, who is so multiply talented, it would be a litany for me to describe him. We have a man who's an RIT alum right now doing the design work, who comes to us also from City newspaper. So we're committed to engaging in our planning and our day-to-day work, RIT faculty and students and staff.
Okay. How about if we remind our listeners again about your first speaker coming up on September 15th, Dr. Esther Conwell of the University of Rochester. She will be speaking in Carlson Auditorium starting at 8 p.m. on September 15.
Yes, Mike, excellent. We are delighted to have Dr. Conwell with us. She's not only a local treasure, but clearly a nationally prized and visible faculty member. She was awarded the National Medal of Science by President Obama in 2010. She is a member of the prestigious National Academy of Sciences and the National Academy of Engineering, and she holds a joint appointment at U of R in chemistry and in physics. She's recipient of many honorary doctorates and various other awards, like the Discover Award for the top women scientists. And she will be, this is distinctive to our series, she will be talking about her own research. Clearly, she's a pioneer on women, for women in science, but she's going to be talking about her early breakthrough research on electron transport in semiconductors, but also about her continuing work with the conductive properties of materials, specifically DNA. She has contributed, her work has contributed in a very large way to the technological revolution and various other advances. So we are particularly delighted to launch the series this year with Dr. Esther M. Conwell.
And about one per month on average, starting with Dr. Conwell on September 15th, right through May 2nd, and Elizabeth Turk speaking on emptiness of matter. As we mentioned previously, most of these are in Webb Auditorium, with a couple of exceptions, including the first one, Dr. Conwell, and free and open to the public, anyone who wants to come.
Absolutely. And we hold a wonderful reception afterward, an opportunity to meet and continue chatting with, beyond the questions and answers, continue chatting with the speaker, have some refreshments with us, and perhaps get a book signed by the noteworthy speaker.
And if anyone wants more information, they can go to your website, cwgp.org, They can find out more about the Caroline Werner Gannett Project, Visionaries in Motion 5.
Certainly.
Well, Mary Lynn, thank you so much for coming in for the record-setting fourth appearance here in Studio 86.
Mike, it's a pleasure and a delight always to talk with you and to our audience.
Tune in next time for another in-depth discussion from Studio 86. Studio 86 is recorded live in Building 86 on the RIT campus and is produced by RIT University News Services.